This is the All Saints Today podcast, a discussion of contemporary issues.
Our guest is Glorianne Smith. Glorianne Smith is a nationally recognized leader in curriculum leadership with more than 20 years experience designing and cultivating communities of learning in urban school districts. Her leadership abilities were developed by her late parents, Pastor Wilbur Allen Jr. and missionary Charlotte Allen. As the child of a pastor, she was reared with high expectations of education, service, compassion, and the spirit of excellence. She earned a BS from the University of Akron and a Master of Education from Cleveland State University. Glorianne led high-profile projects in Cleveland Metropolitan School District, Washington, D.C. Public Schools, Detroit Public Schools, and Canton City Schools. As a strategic advisor, she was a keen ability to create learning and development strategies that ensure success, a champion for building learning communities that are collaborative and equitable. Glorianne is passionate about children reaching their full potential through learning and meaningful experiences. She is committed to creating learning opportunities that nurture the whole person. She is a visionary thought leader who has exceptionally quick ability to identify, focus, and execute pivotal solutions with a great deal of discretion. She resides in Solon, Ohio with her husband, Brian Smith, and she is an active member of All Saints Temple Church of God in Christ. Glorianne, welcome to our program today.
Well, thank you for having me, Pastor Allen. I am very privileged to be here to shed some light on the issues in education today.
Yeah, I really believe this is a critical area that must be addressed, that must be discussed, because this particular topic affects the future generations, the future of our children. So we want to begin. So what is the state of our education system in a post-pandemic world?
Well, you know, Pastor Allen, you know, in March 2020, our world just came to a halting stop. It seems like in the school world, it was time for spring break, our children on spring break, and they never came back. They never came back. And the impact of being out of school and not having face-to-face instruction, not being able to collaborate with other students, not being able to engage in extracurricular activities, it really impacted our students, particularly in the areas of academic progress, in the areas of mental health and social emotional well-being, and students with disabilities not being able to receive their legally mandated therapies that they are to receive. So when we think about the pandemic, you know, students, children, there were a lot of very frightening impacts that they were dealing with. Not only they were isolated socially, they were very concerned and fearful about their family's health. There was the issue of loved ones dying. You have the economic impact. Parents were losing jobs. And then when we think about children of color, Hispanic children, children that are in lower incomes, the pandemic impacted them more so. And those children were actually out of school for longer periods of time because a lot of the superintendents, the policymakers, they had to make sure that it was safe in order to return to school. Because in many of those communities, the vaccination rates were low. Those communities are dealing with a lot of chronic health diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure. So the COVID-19 really began to really take its toll on those communities. So those children had to stay out of school longer. And if you kind of think about it, you think about some of the more affluent neighborhoods, those children many times had options of returning to school. They could actually be in school. Their parents had a choice in many cases. So students could still continue to receive that level of instruction that they need. But as I previously stated, you know, those children that are Black in low income communities, the pandemic really, it impacted them really, really much more. In terms of the academic progress, being out of school for long periods of time, you could just imagine the impact that it made. And just think about it. We have children that are in the first grade. They spent all of kindergarten at home. So a lot of those routines, procedures, those structures of being in a school environment, they didn't receive that. You know, as far as their literacy, their those emergent literacy, those foundational reading skills, that really requires direct, explicit instruction. So you can imagine as a first grader, our academic progress has really been very, very low, really low. And I'll speak a little later on the academic achievement gaps in areas related to children that are underserved, the children that are low income, children of color. So that pandemic, being out of school, you know, that just widened that gap. In terms of the social emotional health of our children,
yes,
you know, being isolated, being away from those extracurricular activities, just being social, children were dealing with levels of depression, numbers of suicide and considering suicide, those numbers increased, particularly among girls. So it really took its toll. And then in terms of, as I stated earlier, children that are on IEPs, that have disabilities, that, you know, their actual IEP, their individual education plan, by law states that they should be receiving certain amount of therapies. They just did not receive those. They didn't receive it. So you could understand the impact that the pandemic had on us in the education system. Now that we're back in school, now we're kind of thinking about how can we reinvent education? Because not everything negative came out of the pandemic. There were a lot of hurtful, impactful things on how it impacted our students, but there are also positives
Okay.
So as we're thinking about how we can reinvent to help boost our student learning so we can help fill those gaps, so we can accelerate their learning, one, we have technology.
That's true.
So how now we're using technology. Technology can now be used in the classroom, part of the instructional process. So that is one way. Another way that many school districts are thinking to accelerate that learning from the pandemic is to extend the learning day by providing these after-school programming, extending the school day so that students are exposed to additional interventions that are needed and additional instruction that's needed. So this is where we are in this post-pandemic world, really trying to accelerate student learning, really thinking about how we can begin to reinvent education, how we can begin to bring these technologies into the classroom.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I've had some other conversations with other individuals, and I've been somewhat concerned about what's going to be the long-term impact upon these children, say 5 years down the road and even 10 years down the road in terms of their academic preparedness?
It will have a tremendous impact. And when we begin to think about our children of color, children from low-income families, they did not have the access. Mm. They did not have the adequate access to education, that direct face-to-face instruction that's needed. So unless you have these additional supports, these additional supplements that are really helping to accelerate their learning. Mm. You know, when you think, just thinking about reading, literacy, I gave the example of the little kindergartners that were home remote last year. They come to school in first grade this year. The expectation is that when the child enters first grade, they should be reading.
That's true.
They should be reading. They should know their letters. They should know their letter sounds. They should know CVC words, their blending words. They have strategies to decode words. So these children, unless they have some and there is only so much time in the school
day. That's true.
There is just so much time in the school days. It's really difficult. You can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. You can be very strategic on how you plan interventions into the day, bringing in tutors to support children. But these children, by third grade, the state law says that if children are not reading and able to pass the third grade Ohio State achievement test, they will be retained in the third grade. Mm. So that gap, and I'm going to speak on that gap, it becomes wider. But literacy is such a standard, a rule of thumb that dictates many outcomes of the future of children. So not being able to read adequately, not being able to comprehend text, that's how we get information.
That's true. That's right.
So if you are not able to do that, and many times children, by the time they get in the fourth grade, if they are not reading by the fourth grade, and by the time a child is in fourth grade, they should be reading for information. Mm. Kindergarten or third grade, they're learning to read.
Okay.
From fourth grade up, they are reading for information. If you're not able to do that, kids get frustrated. Mm. They begin to act out.
Oh, I see.
Suspensions. Yeah. So the impact, the long-term impact academically, social, emotional well-being, we're going to see the effects of this.
Okay.
For years.
Years to come.
And as I was saying, like those children in high poverty areas, children of color, they're the most impacted, because those additional supports, those additional services that they need, they probably won't get them outside of the school day.
Yes, yes. So what is blended learning?
So one of the things parents are probably beginning to hear a lot about, and I was beginning to hint on it in the question around the post-pandemic world and reinventing itself. So as we were out virtually, students were engaging in supplemental programs that were online. So now that we're face-to-face, one of these great ideas, one of these good things, we now have all of this technology access. So not only are students getting their face-to-face, they're getting their direct instruction, now we can begin to use technology. There are some excellent reading programs that provide individualized learning pathways for students. And that this program will kind of guide students and kind of give them additional review of those areas that they need additional supports in. So when you see that blended learning, it's the blending of face-to-face instruction as well as the use of technology, online programming to meet student needs. Yeah. So that's probably something parents are beginning to hear a lot of. Blended learning, which this will be one of the changes that we'll see in education from here on out.
Well, that's really interesting, because even across the board, you're getting these hybrid functions, so to speak, mm-hmm. where there's in person, but then there's a virtual piece as well.
Yes. So, yes.
What is critical race theory? This is a hot button issue currently.
Yeah.
So if you could give some information on that, that would be very helpful.
Yes. Critical race theory. Hot topic in education. And actually very interesting, but critical race theory is this idea, this academic concept that where the core idea of that racism is not the product of necessarily an individual that feels like, oh, I have racial biases towards this person, or I have prejudice. It's more than just that individual concept of mm-hmm. racism, but it's actually that. And it's the fact that racism has spilled over into the legal system, mm-hmm. into institutions, into policies also. And interesting enough, one of the legal experts that really did a close look at the critical race theory mm-hmm. and really began to create this framework, and they very systematically looked at various entities in our society, like the legal system, the education system, and they began to kind of align it to these racist practices and policies that exist. And one of those experts is actually Kimberly
Crenshaw. That's right.
Kimberly Crenshaw is from Canton,
That's
Ohio.
Right.
Her father was and mother
right.
were wonderful educators in Canton City School District, Crenshaw Junior High
That's
School,
right.
where you attended.
That's right.
I attended. Our sister
That's right.
attended. The school is named after him. But she is one of the leads in that work. And I'll give some examples, and then I'll kind of go into how education kind of threads through all of this. So like one example of where there's like this institutional policy racist, and it's built into some of these policies in such a way, it doesn't clearly say, oh, this Black applicant, because they are Black, they are unable to X, Y, and Z. But one is like in real estate, redlining. Mm-hmm. You know, redlining was this practice that still takes place.
Yes, it does.
But it takes place in these other hidden policies, but that states that this particular area, this particular neighborhood, these particular homes will not be sold to people of color. Mm-hmm. And which is huge. If someone has the credit, if they have the money in this country, you should be entitled to move into that
That's
area.
Correct.
But I'm going to give you a real life example. My husband's father was in the war, World War II. So you remember after World War II, they began building all of these homes
That's right.
for the servicemen. When they came home, they could use their GI
That's
Bill
right.
and they could purchase a home, low interest, do what they needed to do, start their family. Well, one particular area in the Cleveland suburban area where a lot of these homes were built, he could not get one qualified, but they did not sell those homes to the Black GIs that came home. So just how that impacted the family, his family. So they weren't able to purchase a home there. You know, they purchased a home in the city of Cleveland. Mind you, their family went on. They're just fine. You have a white family that did purchase a home over there. They purchased the home with little to almost no interest. They paid for that home. That home was paid for. Mom and dad that purchased it moved, passed away. They passed that home down to their children. Their children got to live in this home, mortgage free, build wealth within the family. And wealth is what they have, real estate, they have money, home, you know, paying for your home. And that's one of the major expenses that everyone has every month. So, so like redlining, that's one example of it. And then, you know, education, the education falls into this because of how teachers are even trained in college. So now with this whole critical race theory, we now have politicians, policymakers that want to say the true root causes of these racism leads back to slavery, goes back to Jim Crow laws, goes back to the civil rights movement. So those are the root causes. Mm-hmm. Those are the root causes as to why these racisms are embedded into institutions today. So a lot of these politicians are saying, no, we need to remove all of that from our curriculum. Our children, they don't need to learn that. Mm. We're just going to push that right under the rug. They don't need to learn that. That's not patriotic. That's not reflective of what America is. And so you can't do that. That's impossible. How can you erase and not expose children to the true history of this country?
That's right.
And who truly helped build this country? So how is that even possible? But a lot of politicians and policymakers, that is what they are trying to do. And they're being very strategic about it. They are trying to get people on school boards so that they are selecting particular curriculums that will eliminate this history. You know, people that are going into state offices, the United States Congress people, these people have these agendas, and that is one of them.
I see.
But there's one thing about trying to cover the truth. You can't cover the truth up.
That's true.
You can't cover the truth up, and you cannot diminish light, because it will always, always, truth will always prevail. And there's a quote from a particular doctor that I want to quote. He's Dr. James Anderson, and he's the Dean of Education at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. And something he said, we don't have to make a choice between patriotism and teaching accurate history. Mm-hmm. He said, it's not one or the other. It's not one
That's
or
true.
The other. We can be patriotic. And he goes on to say that people are patriotic when they understand the society in which we live in, and they're committed to making it a better society. So covering it up and trying to say like slavery did not exist.
See,
that's ridiculous. That's part of our history.
That's it. That's the critical piece, is the fact that it is a part of American history, and that reveals the truth of our country. It reveals the truth of where we are presently as American people.
Absolutely.
And then it also can predict what we're going to be in the future as an American people as well.
Yes. You know, Maya Angelou, she said, history, despite its wretching pain, can never be unlived. But if faced with courage, we will never will never be lived again. Oh, so
yes, yes, I like that.
That was from Maya Angelou.
I like that.
And that is a very, very accurate quote of that kind of sums up that whole critical race theory. Really, you know, as they say, Pastor Allen,
yes,
stay woke, be woke. Because they're really trying to sneak in.
And so we have to pay attention. And then also you're telling me that we have to pay attention who we vote for. And we need to know what their voting record is, what their position is on a lot of different pertinent issues for African Americans, people of color, and low income people. We have to really, really pay attention as to how we're voting. Well, what this is, I love this. This is a good question. What is the school to prison pipeline?
Oh, so the school to prison pipeline. This is another term that we hear a lot about, but that school to prison pipeline, that's a term that we commonly hear when we hear about the numbers of Black and brown children who are funneled from the actual, you know, like directly and indirectly from school right into the prison, into prisons. And what happens is when we look at numbers, there are larger numbers of African American and brown children that are suspended from school, expelled from school. They're viewed as being difficult, unruly, having disabilities. They just don't want to comply. So they're suspended. The rates of their suspension, they're suspended more, they're expelled from school more, and they get introduced into the juvenile justice system. They're continuing, and boom, right into prison. So when we see the mass incarceration numbers, we can see like that process starts from school. Children of color being suspended, being expelled. And I have some statistics that I want to share with you. So, and many times, many school districts began to adopt this zero tolerance discipline policy, like zero tolerance. We're not going to accept anything. If you get into a fight, it's suspension. Yes, if you do this, you're suspended. We don't play. But that zero discipline policy, that helped create this prison, the school to prison pipeline. But in a public school environment, you have Black students facing disproportionately harsh punishment than white students in public schools. So we have with multiple suspensions, you have 42% of Black children receive multiple suspensions compared to white students at 31%. 31% of Black students represent school-related arrest. Black students are suspended or expelled 3 times more than white students. So this is why we have this pipeline from school to the prison. So it's a way that schools, superintendents, building principals have to think about how they are viewing discipline and consequences with students. And now we're beginning to, and I was so happy in Cleveland, our former chief academic officer, we were having a meeting and flat out she said, we're stopping suspensions. She said, this will not be a school district that contributes to the school to prison pipeline.
Yes, yes.
And so we really had to think about in Cleveland, how kids are being disciplined, how students, how we're viewing. So it's more of a, you know, it's just not a table. You know, if you get in a fight, you get suspended. No, let's talk about it. What happened? Let's see what's going on. Maybe there are some other interventions that we can use that are alternatives to a fight. So I'm using some of those methods reduces suspensions that many districts have adopted, which is very good, because we know the whole piece with mass incarceration, and it's just staggering, very staggering, very staggering. So that's, so when we speak on the school to prison pipeline, that's what we are referring to. And so it's very important that we we have some other topics to discuss, but we'll get to that, and we're just going to see these connections.
Okay.
How education just connects when it comes to children of color, Latino children, children that are low income, how these issues really impact them at a greater degree.
Why are there disparities in the achievement gap? I think this is a critical question.
Mm-hmm. So the achievement gap is really looking at standardized tests. And we know our students have to, they're tested. They take these assessments, and this data is analyzed. And when we look at this data, we always see that there is a gap. White students outperform children of color, and the main contributor has to do with the social economic disparity. So when we think about the social economic disparity, we're looking at income, we're looking at poverty rates, we're looking at educational attainment, and we're looking at unemployment. So when we look at those four factors, we kind of put that into social economic disparities. So when we look at the social economic disparity between children of color, Black children, Hispanic children, and white children, most of the time, Black children, they're in a lower, that they're lower. We see high rates of poverty in those communities. We see high unemployment. We see educational attainment is much lower. Income levels are much lower. So when we think about education in a whole, education in this country is the one variable that really makes a difference in a person's future. It makes, the more education that you have, the more access to making more money, better healthcare. So your entire standard of living increases with more education that you have. When you have not acquired a good education beyond your K to 12 years, that is significantly lower. Or if you are a dropout, that means your income is lower. You're working and grinding so much harder. So you may not have, as a parent, you may not have your eye on the importance of education because it didn't work out for you because there were some issues that you had in school. So when we look at those four factors kind of under this umbrella of social economic disparities, Black children, Hispanic children, it hits them harder because those four various factors are, it's usually desperately low. So when we look at, when those children are taking assessments, There's a direct relationship between that disparity and their academics on how they're able to apply academically. But that is the reason. That's why it comes down to to education. So those children that are in those homes where there is more income, those parents are more educated. They are more, they know the importance of education. They're going to make sure that their children have access to education. They're going to make sure that their kids are taking the right courses to prepare them for higher education, so that they are able to get a good education, make more money, so that trajectory actually goes higher for them. But that is the reason why the of those disparities and why there is this achievement gap. And so when we even think about we're in this post-pandemic world right now, our children of color right now, that achievement gap is now even wider for them, because they were out of school for longer periods of time. So now that gap is even wider. We even have even much more work to try to close this gap. And the older a child gets, the more difficult it becomes to close that gap.
I think what's so unfortunate about this achievement gap is it seems like educators are on this island trying to fight or to deal with this issue, because this is really, it's a far-reaching issue, far-reaching problem, because it affects our country economically. There's a whole host of areas that this actually plays out in. And I feel for educators, because it appears they're dealing with it by themselves.
Yes. And education is tied into everything. Mm-hmm. It's tied into our economy. If we are not producing educated individuals, who is going to man the workforce? Who's going to man the workforce? They are not skilled enough to do the work.
That's right. That's right.
So it just, it's a societal, it really requires a societal wraparound to support our students. But Pastor Allen, as we spoke on this whole critical race theory.
That's right.
Because children of color and brown children, that's not where the interest lies. Those policymakers, they don't want to see children of color excel. They don't want to see children of color achieve. They want them to stay right where they are. Mm-hmm. They don't want them to get the knowledge. They don't want them to be educated. They want them right where they are.
And it's so interesting, because especially within our culture, we celebrate athletics. Mm-hmm. And we celebrate athletics more than we celebrate education. And I remember being on the school board here in Canton, and whenever there was an issue of athletics that came to the forefront, I mean, folks would show up to the school board meeting. But when it came down to an issue of academics, then you had a sparse crowd.
Yeah.
And You have brought up some very interesting points as to how education really gives you a glimpse into the future.
Absolutely.
It gives you into the students and their families and generations after that.
And their generations after. That's
well,
right.
Gloria Smith, we want to thank you. We want to thank you for your time and sharing with us some very important information. We're going to have you come back and discuss some more about education, the disparities, and how the importance of education really must be celebrated. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Pastor Allen. And Pastor Allen, in my closing words, you know, it takes a village.
That's right.
As that African proverb states, it takes a village.
Yes.
To really, really support our students, to make sure that they are equipped with what they need to be successful in life.
Yes.
And thank you so much for having me. I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
That was good information.
But I wanted to share the information with the people that we have. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being on our podcast. Well, this is the All Saints Today podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope the information was a blessing to you.